But Susie, before we get into that, let's hear what the weather is going to be.
Well, that's easy enough here from the National Weather Service. It is currently 70 degrees outside. It's saying, believe this, it's saying we're going to have 60% showers today, which is kind of exciting. Am I actually
and,
on this?
And much needed.
Yes, much needed. Showers likely high 82. Chance of thunderstorms this evening, mostly clear, low 57. And then the next few days, it's sunny and in the 90s, 90 and 92, with lows 57 and 60. This chance of showers, we have guests in the studio, and they just came. One of them just came down from Bonner's Ferry and said it's raining up there.
It's raining in Bonner's.
So there's the good news.
Yep.
Okay. That's pretty much the weather.
Okay.
And we'll look forward to those showers.
And the topic today is going to be books and authors and local publishing. And we have with us today in the studio two local authors. One is Mike Reeb. He is author of a brand new book. It's a history called The Inland Salish Journey, Fur Trade to Settlement. Mike, say hello, please, so people can get a fix on your voice.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm just fine. Yeah. I'm hoping for that rain also.
Yeah, you bet. And our other author today is Jerry Pavia. Actually, he's a photographer as well as an author. And he's one of the two photographers with Tim Cady who produced and photographed the book Selkirk Spectacular. Jerry, why don't you say hello?
Morning, Chris. Good morning, Susie.
Good morning.
Yeah. And we're going to be talking about the books you're doing. Also, this is a prelude to an event that's coming up this Thursday. It's called the Book Fest. It's a first-time event in Sandpoint. It's a collection of three publishing houses, one of them being Keoki Publishing. That's actually my day job at Keoki Publishing, as well as Lost Horse Press and Blue Creek Press. And there's going to be not 12, but 13 different authors speaking at and coming, signing books, going to be there for people to meet. And they're going to all do, we're calling it a pro slam. There's going to be readings by, I think, maybe 12, maybe all 13 of them are going to do short readings. So people have a chance to hear a little bit from all these different authors about their books. So it's kind of a first ever sort of literary event here in Sandpoint.
Chris, did you say that these were all local authors?
Yes, they're all local.
Well, how exciting is that?
Yeah, we have a lot of local authors, and we thought it would be fun to get them as many as we can into the room together. And we'll rattle those off as we get into it. But first, I wanted to look back on the week. We just came through, the last 2 weeks have been loaded with things going on. 2 weeks ago, we had a lot of national news happening with the Affordable Care Act and a big change of opinion about flying the Confederate flag down south after the shooting that occurred there, as well as the approval by the Supreme Court on gay marriage. That was a big week. This week, we've had a lot of stuff going on here locally. We made it through the 4th of July. But there's a huge fire going down near Bayview. The latest word on that is actually that there has been, they've had some success overnight in building a fire line. So I don't know how much, it's probably only a portion of it contained at this point, but they did have some success last night. So we hope they can carry that forward. And there have been evacuations down there. There are a number of other fires happening around the area. There's several up around Bonner's Ferry, actually, where Jerry's from. Yeah. Jerry, is Bonner's Ferry people, are they pretty cued into the fire scene up there?
Oh, totally. It was interesting on the 4th of July weekend. Usually there's a lot of individual fireworks up there. And on the 4th of July, there were hardly any this year because everyone's aware of the fire danger in our whole region.
Yes, and they do suspect that the Bayview fire was probably human caused. I don't know if it was by fireworks or a campfire, but it's most likely that was human caused. So it's very high fire danger right now in the woods, obviously, with these high temperatures we've been having.
And it's a real clear warning, so to speak, to be super cautious. The woods are very dry. And with these winds, it is no time to have fires anywhere.
Anywhere, yes. And then another bit of sad news that occurred, a local community activist, Laura Bree, died on Sunday, probably early Sunday morning. It was took a lot of people by surprise. And she was actually a candidate for legislature in the last election. We had her in and did an interview with her. And we're sorry to report on her passing. Mm-hmm.
She was just here last Thursday, too.
Oh, she was.
Oh, yeah, with Jim and Jack.
For one of the community groups she's involved with.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Human Rights Task Force.
Yeah, it's always a sad thing when somebody that's so involved in the community and is doing so many things with so many nonprofit groups as she was is leaving us. And our condolences to the family. But now let's turn to the subject of the day, which is books and authors. Jerry, we have with us again, Jerry Pavia. He's a photographer in the photo book Selkirk Spectacular, as well as Mike Reeb. He's the author of The Inland Salish Journey, Fur Trade to Settlement. The first book, Jerry's book, is it's a gorgeous photo book with several hundred photographs of the Selkirks. It's kind of a celebration of our the beautiful place we live in. Mike's book is a celebration, if you will, of the history of our area, the very earliest history, actually, of the tribes and their first interactions with the fur traders and the early settlers here. Jerry, let's start with you. So how did this book come about?
How did it come about? Well, Chris, you know you're the publisher over at Keoki. And Tim Cady's...
I try not to ask a question I don't know the answer to, but...
Okay. Well, Tim Cady's a good friend of mine. He's a terrific photographer. We both live up in Bonners. And we always wanted to do a book together, and I think you know this story. And we were coming down to your Lost in the 50s publishing party, and it took us 40 minutes from Bonners Ferry to your office to dream up an idea and walk in and pretend we had it all clued in. And you bought it on the spot.
Yeah, and so we decided to publish the book, but... so it was a piece of cake after that, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, how we did it was, because then you gave us about a year to get all the images together, which we appreciated. And Tim and I, we looked at the whole region, because it goes all the way through Canada, because the International Selkirk Loop is one of the most driven scenic byways in the U.S. and Canada. And we couldn't go together everywhere, so we split up all the events in the natural areas. And we went to them individually, and then we did about four trips together just so we saw how we were photographing. And that's what the result of it. And one thing I learned, even though I've lived here for like over 40 years, is there's a lot of areas I didn't know existed here, and this is a way more beautiful region than I even thought.
So the book actually, the Selkirks, the range extends from, we're at the southern end of it here, extends well up into Canada. About 300 miles, I believe. This covers specifically the area of the Selkirks that's encircled by the International Selkirk Loop.
Yeah, so from like Sandpoint up through Caslow, over to Trail and Castlegar and Rosland, the ski town up there, and everything in between.
And so it's actually the only... national scenic byway that does cross into another country. It has that distinction, and it actually gets travelers from around the world that come here to specifically to travel around the Selkirk Loop. That's an interesting part of it. But what difference do you see between the Canadian side and the U.S. side?
Well, they use the first letter of the alphabet, A, a lot more than we do. That's one thing they do. And, about the people, I don't know. They're just as friendly as the people down here, and the landscape's real similar. I didn't see much of a difference. You know, it was very interesting. But I liked what you did is you made it a flip book, meaning how you put it together was there's two covers. So one side, you open it up, and it's from the U.S. side, and then you flip it over, and that's the Canadian side. But the difference, I didn't see much of a difference between the people or just a continuation of our landscapes.
That's kind of an interesting idea, actually, that we're not defined by an international border so much as the landscape that kind of unites us, if you will. And you know, Nelson, British Columbia, is actually a sister city of Sandpoint. And there's a lot of similarities between the two towns.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally agree. Yeah.
One of the things I notice about this book, and I don't know if you just mentioned it, but it has two sides to it, as it is the Canadian side with all the actually amazingly beautiful pictures. And then you flip the book over and it's the...
The United States side.
The United States side.
Right. So the author, we should mention, is Canadian.
I was just going to say that, yeah. Ross Claddy from up in... he lives right near the ferry landing at Crawford Bay.
Balfour.
Balfour.
Yeah. Yeah, just outside of Nelson. Yeah, he lives there, and he wrote the text of the book, which goes into the history and natural history of the communities and the ecology of the Selkirk Loop. One thing that's interesting about this book is it has two photographers and one author, Ross. You as a photographer and Tim Cady as a photographer, but you flip through the book and no photographs are identified by a photographer. Why is that?
Well, we decided there was a project that we've always wanted to do together, and it didn't matter who took the images, even though some people want to know. But anyway, the one picture I'll tell you, Tim has the cover on the U.S. side, and it's my cover on the Canadian side.
Yeah.
But the others,
was that by design? How did you come up with that?
No, actually, the U.S. cover with that moose going through the pond at daylight, at sunrise, I was standing right next to Tim, so I had the exact same photograph.
Oh, come on. Tim's was better. Must have been. It made the cover.
You're probably right. It probably was a little better. Oh, yeah. But we just decided it wasn't important who took the images. It was more like get this out to the folks. Some of the people up in Bonners weren't happy with no photo credits because they really wanted to know if it was Tim or me that took the images because we live up there.
Yeah, because you're so well known in Bonners Ferry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I should mention there are a lot of historical photographs as well that illustrate Ross's section on the history of the towns around the loop.
What's really fun about this, looking through it, it's places that I recognize because we've all been up to Caslow. We've all driven that route. I've never stopped to see the glass house. The picture's beautiful. And different things like the Silverton Frank Mills Outdoor Mining Museum down there across, going over to New Denver. It's places that you've passed and maybe not really looked at, but the pictures are gorgeous.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Jerry, what's your background? This actually isn't your first book at all. You've done a ton of books.
This is my 17th book, unbelievably.
Yeah.
Right place, right time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of my other books are books on gardens.
So you specialize basically in garden photography.
I did.
Yeah.
Because I've been up in Bonners almost 40 years, 39, working in the timber industry up there for years. And when I lost my job, my ex-wife and I had to do something. We decided to become photographers, knowing nothing about it. And we became garden photographers because all the images back in the early 80s were out of focus in the gardening magazines. We just got lucky. I think right now, up-and-coming photographers, it'd be so difficult to get a book done because everyone thinks nobody reads books anymore. The publishing world has totally crashed, except for Keoki.
No, actually, small independent presses are having a really hard time.
Yeah, I know.
Everywhere. Yeah, but we actually have three small independent presses in Sandpoint. I'd have to say they're probably, you know, Blue Creek Press is one, Lost Horse Press is another. Lost Horse Press does... a lot of poetry books and literary fiction. Blue Creek Press does a lot of, I guess you could say, books about place and a lot of fiction as well. Keoki Books tends to be pretty much all nonfiction books. But we do have three small presses. Sandpoint is known as an arts town, but most people associate that with the visual arts. And the performing arts, because we have very rich scenes that way. But we actually have a lot of local authors, as we mentioned.
Yeah. So I would want to say that Tim and I really aren't better than any other photographers out there. It's the same thing. It's right place, right time, and having a project that just hits a publisher right when they're looking for something. Mm-hmm. That's all. Mm-hmm. There's tremendous photographers everywhere.
if you are interested in purchasing this book, I'm sure it's at the bookstore up in Bonner's Ferry and some of the local.
Yeah, the local bookstores mm-hmm. all carry it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can find it on Amazon, although who wants to buy from Amazon? Mm-hmm. Amazon, it really kind of scalps the local publishers and, mm-hmm. you know, authors in a sense as well.
So you could go right over to Keoki too.
It's at the Keoki Books website as well. But I'd say support your local bookstores.
I'd say that too. And we got a good one up in Bonner's, Bonner's Books, and they carry it as well.
Yeah, and we have some good ones down here too. Vanderford's is Corner Bookstore, Common Knowledge, all are you know carrying the torch for books, which when you like books, you really like bookstores as well. And I'll mention again that on this Thursday, July 9th, we're having a book festival, if you will. It's called the Book Fest, and it's at the Burned Building in downtown Sandpoint. That's the site of the former Coldwater Creek retail store here in Sandpoint. And we're going to have all three of these local presses are going to be there, as well as we're going to have 13 different local authors, all local authors. Mm-hmm. They've all written books across the spectrum, from a photo book to history books to hiking and recreational guide books to some great fiction works as well. We have several fiction writer authors that are going to be there.
So these two books that we are currently looking at with our two authors that are in the studio, Mike Reeb and Jerry Pavia, will be at this book fair. So
yes,
speak,
yep.
And festival.
Both of these gentlemen will be at the book fair.
Okay, we can even get signed copies.
You can get signed copies.
Good to
and
know.
And you can, you know, ask them the questions that I'm forgetting to ask. Mm-hmm. So,
one thing about this book that Jerry did, the Selkirk Spectacular, it has a lot of pictures of people. You know, I just saw Joe Sweeney and his horse. You know, he used to do horse logging up there, but it was a Joe Sweeney from quite a while ago when he was just a young man.
Yeah, I reached deep into my files for that.
Yeah.
He was horse logging my property, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, he was.
Yeah, he was on my property.
So it was a matter of convenience. And
totally. He was right there. And he looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Part of what photographers need to do is they need to record the present, because in an amazingly short time, the present becomes the past. Mm-hmm. And it creates a historical record on this place.
And you had a good one here in Sandpoint with Ross Hall.
Uh-huh.
No question.
That's a treasure trove of images.
It truly is. It's quite an archive. And Ross Hall actually worked for, I guess you would call the original town photographer, Dick Himes, mm-hmm. and took over his studio. And so part of the archive includes a lot of even older images from Dick Himes. So it is quite a treasure for
our town. Are the Ross Hall and Dick Himes archives, are those known internationally, or at least in this country?
I'd say they're probably known nationally. Ross Hall actually took photographs in his day that were published widely in the New York Times and other national publications. You know, he's not as well known as an Ansel Adams, but I think that people that know photographers and photographic histories, some of them would certainly know of Ross Hall.
And the photos in this book that we're talking about, the Selkirk Spectacular, are in that category as far as there's a historical preservation of the current, plus looking back a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
totally. And it was basically nearly every image, and there's a digital image. Mm-hmm. We're not photographers anymore, but that's for a whole other show.
Digital images.
Talk about how the dilution of the art form, do you think? Or do you think it's helped the art form to be shooting digitally rather than with conventional?
It's interesting because Tim and I did a debate a couple years ago for the Smithsonian Institute, and they wanted to talk about photography and digital images, and how we designed it was I defended film and he defended digital imaging, and I basically got my butt kicked.
Well, you know what? I am a photographer as well. I've taken a ton of pictures, probably more as an avocation than a vocation, but although I do publish a lot of my work in our publications. And I got to say, I really loved film. I really loved being in the dark room and the magic that you have when you develop the film and see and make the prints, especially. And you have a lot of creative control when you're making the prints, especially when you're working with black and white. But the ease and actually the cost savings as well of digital photography, that's the thing that is has transformed the whole process, I think.
I won't reply. It'd be too long of a debate.
Okay.
I just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY, and we're here on this Tuesday, July 7th, on the KRFY Morning Show with two local authors. We're talking about their books that are just recently published.
Yes.
And we're here with Chris Bessler and Susie Prez, your hosts.
And now we're going to talk with Mike Reeb. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Chris.
Your new book, this is actually one of the newest books in town, I'd say, because it's just been released about 6 or 8 weeks ago. It's Inland Salish Journey, Fur Trade to Settlement. And this book is a history of the Inland Salish Indians and their very first contacts with fur traders and the first settlers in the region. First, Mike, so how would you describe the Inland Salish? That's a collection, a large group of tribes that were indigenous to this area.
Right, Chris. The Inland Salish that I cover in this book are really what we would call part of the Inland Empire. Okay. And it involves the Coeur d'Alene tribe, the Spokanes, the Lower Ponderays, the Upper Ponderays, and the Flatheads. And, of course, some of these tribes have go by different handles now, particularly the Kalispel, which are really associated with the Upper Ponderays.
Right, and the Kalispel were actually the tribe that was most prevalent right here around the lake as well.
Correct, yes.
And, you know, I think a lot of people know them because of the Northern Quest Casino these days. The Kalispel now occupy a relatively small reservation outside of Usk, Washington, along the Ponderay River.
Right. They were the last tribe to actually get a reservation. Didn't happen until, I think, about 1913. And they certainly... done very well for themselves with such a little holding, and they didn't have the timber resources like the Ponderays and the Flatheads have, but they've done very well.
They've certainly seen a resurgence thanks to probably the money that's been generated by the casino. So the book really covers the years from 1800 to 1877, when the earliest fur traders and white settlers were coming into the area. So what was happening in this region in those very first years in the 1800s?
Well, the very first documented record we have is when Lewis and Clark came through the Bitterroot Valley in 1805. And the Salish Indians were very friendly, and they picked up on that right away. And then Lewis and Clark's out of the picture, and David Thompson is the next one that comes in and really tells the story of the natives that were here.
And David Thompson was a surveyor for one of the fur companies.
For Northwest Company.
Yes, one of the fur trapping companies. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And when he was here, what year?
He came in 1809. However, there was a group of 42 Americans, mixed group Canadians, mixed bloods, a few Iroquois Indians that were actually in the area earlier. They were there in 1807 and actually met Thompson when he went up river to build a Salish house at Thompson Falls, Montana. So basically the
industry at that time for the thing that was bringing those first white explorers, if you will, here was fur trapping.
Exactly, and specifically beaver, and they of course came down from Canada, which had had 15 years of or more of intense trapping and what have you, and when and Thompson is the one that pioneered the way over here, and I don't know if you've been to Rocky Mountain House over in Canada, but if you have, you can barely trace the tracks that he made coming down to the Kootenai River and then going to the Columbia River, and going all the way to the head of it. And that's where he built his first post. And it's amazing the Indians would had a communication system that just amazed me. About a week or 2 weeks after those 42 quasi-Americans landed in the Bitterroot Valley, Thompson got information from the Kootenai Messenger of them being there. And they had a communication system that would amaze you. It didn't take them very long, and that news was passed around just like you folks were this morning.
Except they didn't have
radio or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, everything was overland or you know, by. We have a lot of rivers here, so there was travel, especially in Thompson's case, by the rivers. So did Thompson see those first guys that beat him here as competitors? Because they were here trapping the beaver before he could get here?
Actually, he didn't, because there was one fur trader that was with them, and he went off and got killed by the Blackfeet. And so here were all of these trappers with no place to trade their furs. And so Thompson got all of their furs, and then also ended up hiring a number of them. And they went on. Some of them even stayed on until Hudson Bay Company took over Northwest Company. And some of them settled in the Willamette Valley. Farmers.
They became farmers, from fur traders, fur trappers to farmers, huh?
Right. The actual beaver and the peak of the fur trade ended by 1840. And
that was driven by the fact that beaver were declining, but also wasn't there a kind of a change in the fashion world that also led to decline in demand for beaver?
Correct. Most beavers were made into felt and felt hats, and the silk hat replaced the beaver. And those that stayed in the fur trade went to buffalo robes. And there was the market for marten and mink and muskrat and that sort of thing, which this country had lots of. Picked up and they'd still get a few beaver, but not very much. But the Indians themselves had a difficult time when they discovered gold and other things.
Yeah, that's changed the whole.
That changed the whole thing.
Complexion. And, yeah,
mm-hmm. The influx of the white man into the area changed everything.
The prospectors coming in. They were after a different sort of. Sort of revenue source at that point, and one that brought a lot harsher results on the indigenous people, I think.
Well, everyone loves a history book, and I'm just curious how you went all the way back to 1800 and found out all this information, a lot of research, and where was all this stuff documented?
Okay, this entire book is taken from journals, diaries, government reports, so forth, all the way along, even military reports. And I just looked at those, and when I started looking at them, I was more interested in the fur trade, the white guys deal. But in this area, these Indians had such a major role that I figured I'd tell that story from their standpoint. And that's what happened.
So where do you find this information, these records?
Some of it is on the internet. Some of it is in libraries. And even at some of the universities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like I went to Gonzaga for some material mm-hmm. that's in this book. And
was any of it handed down orally to some of the Native people's current tribal elders?
No, I stay completely away from that.
So it's very factual.
You have a local author here that specializes in that, and so I was more interested in something that you could say, hey, this guy said it, and this guy was here.
It's been recorded in writing,
yeah.
Yes, rather than the oral tradition.
Okay, I was just curious.
So, Mike, how did you? This is your first book, unlike Jerry with his, scads of books. This is your first book. How did you decide to write a book? What is your background?
Okay, I'm a retired forester, and I'd always had an interest in history, and I myself would trap part time, and so that kind of all went together. And I never did take to skiing or snowshoeing in the winter. I did enough of that crawling up and down these hills.
As a forester.
And we didn't have a trail. We always went by the compass and straight up and straight down. And so I just didn't want to take up skiing. And so I thought, well, heck, I'll look into this, and I looked into it for a year or so, and then I said, hey, there's a story to be told here, and that's what got me, that made me pick up the pencil.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Could I ask Mike a question?
Sure, yes, you may.
Thank you, Chris. So Mike, does David Douglas figure in your book?
David Douglas did come through this country in about 1833. He went with one of the fur traders out of Fort Colville, and he ended up just kind of touring the area. In fact, he and Nathaniel Wythe had a big argument over whether it was a sage grouse or whether it was a goose or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but anyway...
And David Douglas was a naturalist or a botanist. Was he a botanist or biologist?
Was he sort of a botanist?
Yeah, he was.
I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show, and we're in the studio today with two local authors, Mike Reeb, author of Inland Salish Journey, as well as the photographer Jerry Pavia, who photographed Selkirk Spectacular. And we're going to take a musical break here.
Yes, we are. And this song was recorded in 1969. It's a George Harrison song. It's Here Comes the Sun. And he recorded it in 1969 with just two of the Beatles, Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, at Abbey Road in London. I didn't know this, but John Lennon wasn't there on this song.
Oh, really? I didn't know that either.
I know, I didn't know. So it's just three of the Beatles. John Lennon was recovering from a car crash in Scotland. So this is Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. And that was Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. And we're here in the studios of 88.5 KRFY for the morning show with Chris and Susie. And we have guests in the studio, Jerry Pavia, authors, actually, local authors, Jerry Pavia and Mike Reeb, both have books out, new books out, and we're talking about the books themselves and the process of writing books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is a bit of a prelude to an event that's coming up this Thursday, July 9th. It's going to be in the Burned Building. It's called the Sandpoint Summer Book Fest and Prose Slam, and it's from 5 to 7:30 p.m., and there's going to be 13 local authors at this event signing. People have a chance to just chat with them, ask them questions, and then there's going to be what we're calling a prose slam. Now, a poetry slam is actually a competition. This is not a competition, but it's going to be all these authors given a chance to read a short pieces from their books. So it should be interesting to hear all these different thoughts, and some of them are fiction, some of them are nonfiction, some of them are guidebooks, but all these authors have different things to say.
What are the dates and times of this?
Again, it's this Thursday, July 9th, 5 to 7:30 p.m. in the Burned Building, which is right downtown. And I thought I'd rattle off the local authors that are going to be there. The two we have in the studio with us, Mike Reeb, author of Inland Salish Journey, as well as Jerry Pavia, who's a photographer with Selkirk Spectacular. Also, we're going to have Bill Percy. He is the author of Climbing the Coliseum. That's actually was a finalist for a National Book Award for self-published fiction, and it's a new book as well. Jim Johnson has a brand new fiction book out called It Is the Fall. Sandy Compton, well-known locally, quite a prolific author, actually. He is going to be reading from The Scenic Route, his new book. Bill Collier, who's been in the station before, he's going to be there with his new book, The Adventures of a Helicopter Pilot. Jane Fritz, author of Legendary Lake Ponderé. Marianne Love, also well-known, author of Lessons with Love. Howard Petchel. Is a really interesting author. He's done quite a number of books on stamp counterfeiting, and he's going to be reading from his book, Stamp Counterfeiting. He's a former postal inspector, and his job was to find counterfeiters, or part of his job anyways, and he's one of the foremost authorities, and he lives here in town, actually. He's done three books on stamp counterfeiting.
That's the first time I've ever heard of such a thing, stamp counterfeiting.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, you know, you think of counterfeiting money, but mm-hmm. there was a large industry in counterfeiting mm-hmm. stamps as well, because there's actually a lot of money mm-hmm. to be made.
Wow.
Also speaking will be Jim Mellon. Jim's not sure he's speaking, but he's going to be there with Trails of the Wild Selkirks, his hiking guidebook that he has authored in collaboration with Dennis Nichols, the late Dennis Nichols. And finally, Tom Ruppert, who has a new young adult novel, The Far Journey.
Wow.
Actually, I think there's one more that just one more author that came on board yesterday. I don't have her name.
Well, I just wanted to also remind our listeners that on Thursday morning, this must be Literary Week, Author Week, because the guest with Jim and Jack will be local author Susan Fiskin, who just came out with her new book. That's who's going
right.
to be there.
That's Susan. Okay. Susan Fiskin will right. also be at the signing.
Well, she'll also be here on the KRFY Morning Show at 8 o'clock. So it's just all about books this week.
And her new book. Do you have the title?
I don't have the title, but I know it's about life in the mansion of Hugh Hefner.
In the Playboy Mansion.
Playboy Mansion.
I think she's a former bunny.
And she's
written a new book.
I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Tune in to 88.5.
I haven't met her myself.
Yeah.
But that's why you want to come to something like this book fest. You get a chance to meet some pretty interesting people from all walks of life.
You know, we always think of Sandpoint as the arts community. Well, writing a book is an artistic endeavor.
Yeah.
But you think of visual arts. But this is another aspect of what makes Sandpoint so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
13 local authors in one place. That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's Thursday night at the Burn Building, which is the former Coldwater Creek storefront. And that starts at 5 p.m.
5 p.m. And again, we're in the studio here with Mike Reeb, author of Inland Salish Journey, Fur Trade to Settlement, and Jerry Pavia, photographer of the new book, Selkirk Spectacular. You were just talking about books being an artistic endeavor. Let's dig into that a little bit. Jerry, tell us about the process of putting together the book.
Okay, and I want to remind you that I'm co-photographer along with Tim Cady, and I appreciate that you're letting us outliers from Bonner's Ferry be part of your local event.
You know what? Bonner's Ferry is local to us.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Thank you. Well, what we did, not to talk about in the field, I mean, I explained that before about how we split up the whole region. But once we got done, Tim and I literally had probably, I bet almost 3,000 images. And we got together and repeatedly narrowed it down to 12, I think it was about 1,200 that we then dumped on you over at Keoki. And one of your staff was not happy because we gave you too many beautiful images and she didn't know what to do. So she got a hold of us and she said, can you cut this in half? So then it was the first cut. So then we came back with about 600 images. And then you guys put a beautiful book together and then you mistakenly gave it to us and said, hey, you want to make any changes? And I've never had that done before, which was, and I talked to Tim, I said, this is unheard of. We get to make changes. And we took the book and we redid it. And essentially I think it was 82 images we changed and moved around in the book. And then we gave it to you to see what you thought. And, you know, you liked it better than the original book you put together. And Tim and I really appreciated that you actually took our advice and actually made the book different. So that was what it was once we did the photography, how it went forward.
Yeah, and actually, I had to say, you're saying you, but actually it was the editor and the art director. That's Billie Jean Gerke, our editor, and our art director, Laura Wall, are the ones that really did all the hands-on work with this book. And they, as you mentioned, it's a gorgeous piece. And I think it's actually pretty smartly done as well.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, and Laura and Billie Jean, Tim and I never had a problem working with you guys. Sometimes you get into a couple of the other books I did, I had a big problem with the editors. You guys were just simple to work with. Plus, you gave us that thing nobody does and let us change images.
Yeah.
Well, a book this beautiful and this informative and all the things that it offers would not be a slam dunk. It would take quite a team to put it together and a process, and it shows the hard work you put into it.
And for you, Mike, the process of putting a book together, you described all the research that went into it, but you at this point you're sitting with a big box of notes or manuscripts from old journals and records. How do you boil that all down into the book, and what was the writing process like for you with Inland Salish Journey?
Well, the writing process was pretty simple. I grabbed a pencil and I hand wrote this entire thing, and
the old fashioned way.
The old fashioned way. I'm a fossil. When I went to high school and told them I was going to go to college and what have you, they said, well, you don't have time to take typing. You're going to have a secretary. Well, I quit my career just as computers came out. And, oh, to this day, I wish I'd learned how. But anyway, the thing that kept me focused was I would do it year by year. And I started in 1805. No, actually, I went to some Canadian records. And there was a real good journalist who started doing it in about 1800 up at Rocky Mountain House and Fort Edmonton and what have you. Some very good information there about some of the people that came down here. And by doing that, I was able to keep it in order, and I would look for sources for those periods, and that's how I organized it, if that's what you were getting at.
Yeah, and then how long did this process take?
It took 4 years.
4 years, yeah.
Yeah, and then took another 2 years to get it through Billie Jean and Laura, although there's not many pictures in the book. But,
yeah, well, it's a handsome book as well. And there are a couple maps in there.
Correct. Yeah, there's a couple of maps, and then there's also some photos that are, they're all in black and white.
But there are some historical shots, and since obviously in this time period, at least the first part of this time period, there weren't any cameras around, so a lot of the artwork that's reproduced are paintings from some of the early painters like Charlie Russell, who depicted the lifestyle of the fur trappers and the Indians.
Correct. And then the cover is a watercolor done by Gustav Schoen in 1856. And it's rather a unique way the Indians crossed a major river. They just wrapped up everything they owned in their tent and went across the river.
Yeah,
the women and kids at the top in the top of the tent, and the man or the would grab the horse's tail, and across the river they went.
And the tent would be folded up in such a way that it
made into a little ball.
So
it was airtight.
Right. Right, and they would flow across with that.
I just know that people love history, and this is a true account from all of the work you did, 4 years of research, 2 years of production, basically, all done by hand. That's pretty tenacious. Good job. but as far as history, this would be very interesting and compelling to read. Seems like.
Yeah. It compiles all these old original journals of the very first white people into this area, and recording their relations with the tribes.
When I read stuff like this, I think that those people were made out of something else because they were so hardy. Mm-hmm. You know, they could do so much. I mean, they survived in extreme conditions, and the native people also. Mm-hmm.
Yes. The thing that really interested me is a certain number of Spokane and Coeur d'Alene and Kalispell people, perhaps 10 to 20% of the tribe, would annually go hunt buffalo over in Montana or southern Idaho. And can you imagine taking your family and moving across this country all the way around up the Bitterroot River and over into the Big Hole,
and they had some established routes, but the trails were probably pretty sketchy in the, over a lot of that territory.
They went so often that the trail along the Clark Fork River here was pretty well beaten, and of course the other thing you find out right away is these major trails that they had are now highways.
Yeah.
Are highways.
Because they made the trails in this most sensible place.
Yeah.
We just came along and kind of co-opted that with our modern highway system.
And it wasn't that long ago that these native folks, were putting their family into something with their horses and pulling them across to the plains to hunt buffalo, to dry the meat, to bring it back over and spend the winter and survive. Mm-hmm. It was only a few hundred years ago.
Yeah, actually a few generations back, not more than three or four generations back, if you catch the last part of that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these Indians that lived here were tenacious when it came to the buffalo, and they were some of the last Indians to go over into, they had to go all the way over to Billings, Montana, and way out to, and they took part in some of the last buffalo hunts.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're coming close to the end of our time here, so I want to say thank you to Mike, again, Mike Reeb, author of Inland Salish Journey, Fur Trade to Settlement, and Jerry Pavia, photographer for Selkirk Spectacular. Mike and Jerry, thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, and I'll see you Thursday night.
We'll see both of you Thursday night at the...
Likewise.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Sandpoint Summer Book Fest. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Yep, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so, Susie, I think we should probably let folks know about a few things that are coming up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll go out with a song then, but coming up, as we just said, the Sandpoint Summer Book Fest and Prose Slam is this Thursday night at the Byrne Building, which is the former Coldwater Creek storefront. We all know where that is on First Avenue. It's actually 111 North First Avenue. 311, I think.
Yeah, there
it
is.
It starts at 7 p.m. and goes until 7:30. You'll see 13 local authors.
I think it starts at 5.
Did I say 7?
You said 7.
Oh, yeah,
it starts
you.
At 5, runs to 7:30.
5 p.m. and goes till 7:30 p.m.
Yeah,
thank you.
I have a feeling it might go a little later than 7:30, just because we have an awful lot of authors and,
I think
and
you're
readers
right.
there, but mm-hmm. it'll be fun.
It'll be a lot of fun. And if you want more information, you can call 263-3573. There's also the 13th Annual Antique and Classic Boat Show that's going on this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's at the Sandpoint Marina and Boardwalk. There'll be a parade of boats on Sand Creek.
Yeah, it's a very big show. It's one of the largest classic wooden boat shows in the Inland Northwest, and it's really a lot of fun to come down and check out those boats. You can walk along the boardwalk. See the boats. There are various vendors and activities going on. Also happening that day is and kind of almost in conjunction, a little bit upstream on Sand Creek, is the Great Flatwater Regatta. So people can check that out when they're checking out the boat show as well.
Another thing that's coming up tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock right here on 88.5 KRFY, I'll be interviewing Ron Ragone, Patricia Walker-White, and Miriam Robinson, who are the presenters of the upcoming show, which starts on July 10th and 11th, July 17th and 18th and 19th. It's called Red Hot Patriot. It's the wit of Molly Irvins. She was a journalist down in Texas, and that is a play that's being put on at the Little Panada Theater. So they'll be here in the studio to talk about this play tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there is another big event happening this town. That's happening this weekend, and it's the Sandpoint Summerfest.
That's right.
Yeah.
Out at Camp Eureka.
At Camp Eureka. And mm-hmm. it's happening Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and they have about 8 or 10 different bands that are going to be there for that. That's been going on for a whole bunch of years as well. It was originally called the Jerry Fest. We spoke with a couple of the principals on that last week.
Last week, yeah. And speaking of Jerry Fest, I just have to say, the Hive put on this weekend on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night from 4:30 till it ended each night, a simulcast live of the live concert in Chicago, the last concert of the Grateful Dead. It was pretty spectacular if you went down there. Did you go down?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I was there like the whole time. And I'm not even a Deadhead.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to see what was going on. It was.
And when was that again?
They had 70,000 people at Soldier Stadium in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was just a simulcast.
And you watched it here.
It was happening in Chicago.
Okay. At the Hive.
At the Hive. They opened their doors. They had 12-foot screens, like television screens, and music, you know, of course it was the music,
right.
And it was blasting. You had to wear earplugs, but it was very nice of them to open up the Hive for that. It was free and open.
Oh, did they have a good crowd?
Yeah, you know, it kind of came in.
I didn't hear about that.
I know, it wasn't advertised.
It wasn't well publicized.
No, it wasn't. It was a word of mouth sort of thing.
We'll have to talk to those guys about the importance of publicity.
Yep.
Something else that's happening this weekend, actually the 11th and the 12th, it's Saturday and Sunday. It's the Selkirk Antler Expo. Reading from our notes here, it's everything antler during the expo. It's held at Hickey Farms at 674 Hickey Road and presented by the Idaho Big Game Foundation from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. both days. And you'll be able to browse the public antler display tables. Everybody's also invited to bring their own favorite sheds that they've collected in racks for everyone to admire. There is an admission cost for that, but that sounds rather interesting. As well, on Saturday, it's the second annual Sandpoint Beer Fest. This is being put on by the Greater Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce from noon to 4 p.m. on the lawn outside Trinity at City Beach. There's live music with Doug Bond and Marty Perrin. Plus, there'll be a whole bunch of local and regional craft beers on tap.
Hey, Chris. It's yes. just about time for us to go, and I just want to remind people there's a lot going on. Also, JC's race on Sunday. All of this information can be found at Sandpoint Online or krfy.org. Our website, we have a community calendar that Keoki gives to us, or Sandpoint Online does. So all of this, what's going on in our town, and there's a lot, can be found there. And I think it's about time to say goodbye. What do you think?
I think so. Very, very near that time.
Do we have a song we can hear half a minute of?
Yeah, let's go out with Bruce Springsteen, Fire, since fire is on our minds.
Okay. Have Thanks. A beautiful day.
Yes, as good as we can with the smoke out there. I'm driving.